702. Weekend Breakfast with Googs Mhlungu. Standing in for Refilwe Mpakanyane on 702.
Live.
Online.
Smartphones.
DSTV.
92.7.
And 106 FM.
702. Let's walk the talk.
It's 20 minutes before 7 o'clock. You are still on Weekend Breakfast, the Workers' Day edition, right here on 702. And earlier on at the start of the show, I asked, do you remember what your first job was? What did you do and how much money did you make? Or were you just working for free because you needed the experience? Please do let us know on SMS on 31702. Send us your WhatsApp message on 0727021702. It is time for us, though, to get into our nature diary. And as always, we're joined on the line by CSI and nature conservationist Tim Neary. Tim, good morning.
Good morning. Are you well this morning?
I am. How are you?
I am. Funny enough, my very first job was the very first paying job, let's put it that way, was assembling motorbikes. They would come three in a crate, the little 50cc's from Japan, and then I would assemble them as a young schoolboy. We would just put in the wheels and connect all the wiring, etc., and prep the motorbikes for sale.
How much did you make? Do you remember?
50 cents a motorbike.
Really?
Yes.
Sure. Which must, when you're a kid, though, that's a lot of money.
It was a lot of money. And I mean, I went on, I think, as an apprentice, my very first wage was 24 rand 50 a week.
Oh, wow.
I got an extra 1 rand 50 because I had matric maths.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Is there any coffee today?
Absolutely. The coffee's on the desk. The rusk is, I'm not chewing on the rusk, so you don't hear the crunching sound. Coffee's on the desk, and of course, all fired up this time, I think, with something different. Not a creature you're going to take home and keep as a pet in your garden.
No, what is a manta ray?
Well, we're going to have to ask all about this because I find rays fascinating. I think they look prehistoric. And the way that they go through the water has always fascinated me. And I had a wonderful experience in Cape Town at Two Oceans Aquarium in their tank. And the ray was huge. It's not a manta ray down there or the one that they had in the tank, but it was an absolutely ginormous animal. And what I used to enjoy doing both there and Ushaka was watching how they would hover on the bottom of the tanks, literally 5 millimeters or 10 millimeters off the bottom, and they just had this most wonderful hovering moment, and I really enjoyed them. And then I met them in the sea because we didn't really see them down in the Eastern Cape where I lived. But I then met rays in Nyomban just up from Nyomban in Mozambique, and they were spectacular, and it was just so fascinating to watch them in the water. They do have that terrible sort of thought process where a ray was responsible for the death of Steve Irwin.
Yes.
But don't take it out on the rays.
They did get a bit of bad PR for that.
Yeah, they got a bit of bad PR for that. But, you know, and you always hear about the stingray and how nasty that could be. But I think they are fascinating creatures. And what role do they play in the ocean is always that I like to know, about the roles that these different creatures play. Because everybody's got a job to do.
Mm.
You know, you either got a job to do and you food at some point. So what is the area of that? And then the last thing that I met was, it was called the manta ray, which was towed behind a yacht from the Five Gyres Institute that went around the earth or went around the seas. And it was collecting plastics, microplastics, and they towed it all the way behind them with this sort of like a net filter in it. And it was shaped like a manta ray with its mouth, or like a ray with its mouth open. And this sucked up the water and allowed the water to pass through. And they were able to tell, and this was 10 plus years ago, maybe 15 years ago. And this was able to determine the level of plastics that were across the ocean, the level of microplastics. because it could dive, they could set it to different depths, etc. Mm-hmm. But I think let's find out about the real rays and Earth, what are they? And I was fascinated seeing there's talks on the rays, there's a report on their communication, and that also fascinated me. But rays of Alawal Shoal, the devil ray, and a cleaning station. Now that sort of, you know, you think of your local filling station taking your car for a clean. Do they have a similar thing for rays, where they go along and they sort of washed, polished and passed on? What is a ray cleaning station?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Well, we do have someone on the line who I think might have the answer for us. Michelle Carpenter, marine biologist and PhD candidate at the University of Cape Town. Michelle, good morning. Welcome to the show.
Good morning, Google and Tim. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for joining us.
Voice. I've got a bit of flu, a first time in a couple of years.
No, that's okay.
Great timing.
So, Michelle, what is a manta ray?
So, a manta ray is a species of ray. There are roughly 600 species of rays in the world. What they are is they are flattened sharks. So sharks and rays are these cartilaginous fish. They have no bones in their body. They're made up entirely of the material found in your ears and nose, which makes them very light and flexible and hydrodynamic in the water.
Mm-hmm.
And then the manta ray specifically, so these rays, they're the flattened sharks. The manta ray is actually a plankton-eating ray. It makes up about 2 to 3 species. But in the manta ray family, there's actually about 9 to 10 species of mobula or manta rays that eat plankton. So it's a big open ocean ray that eats the smallest animal in the ocean.
It sounds like another about a flattened shark. It sounds like it's got a relationship with a whale. Out of interest now, when you say it's big, how big do they grow? Sort of some idea of size and weight?
Yeah, so the manta rays are actually the biggest rays in the sea. So the reef manta ray gets up to about 5.5 meters disc width. So that's wingtip to wingtip. And the giant manta ray actually reaches to about 8 meters wingtip to wingtip, or maybe a bit greater. So, yeah, they're quite massive. There is a third species being described in the Caribbean and Atlantic. But yeah, the giant manta ray is actually the biggest ray in the ocean.
When you say it's a like a flattened shark, what does that mean?
Yeah, so you'll see when you look at a stingray or a ray, they look quite flat.
Mm-hmm.
So sharks and rays have been around for the cartilaginous group. They've been around for 400 million years. Right, so from about 200 million years ago, the sharks branched off and became bottom-dwelling animals, so they kind of evolved for life on the seafloor. You'll see with the typical stingrays, they've got that round shape and a mouth underneath the body, and they've adapted for life on the seafloor. But then actually about a few million years after that, the rays then evolved for an open ocean lifestyle. So you'll see that they then adapted kind of a diamond shape. So if you see pictures of a manta ray or a spotted eagle ray, they've got a diamond shape, and that helps propel them through the open ocean. So the manta rays and mobula is actually the most recently evolved of the ray group.
No, Michelle, please tell me, you've discovered the Alawal Shoal Devil Ray Cleaning Station. You know, I take my car along to have it cleaned from time to time, etc. And I'm just trying to visualize a whole bunch of rays standing in a long queue waiting to have themselves scrubbed and cleaned. What is a Devil Ray Cleaning Station?
Yeah, that's a great analogy, Tim. Because they do like to clean together as a social experience. But just to start from the basics, so a cleaning station is a special area on reef where a little cleaner fish, there's actually many species of cleaners, but for instance, a bicolor cleaner wrasse, that fish will tend to its client. So a client can be a little fish, a big fish, a turtle, a stingray, a raggedy shark, a devil ray, and the cleaner fish will get parasites and get a meal out of this relationship, whereas the client, such as the devil ray, will get these parasites removed. Maybe they get their wounds cleaned, which helps prevent infection, or they get pieces of dead skin removed, which also helps prevent infection. There's a lot of bacteria and a lot of parasites in the ocean, and these animals actually really rely on these cleaning stations for their health. So like us humans, we go to the dentist and the hairdresser or maybe the car wash for our cars just to maintain ourselves and our methods of transport. Kind of same idea. These guys have to clean whenever possible. And they actually come back to the same exact cleaning stations year after year. So, Aliwal Sholton, you've dove it before. You've dove in Yamban. You'll see that year after year, the devil rays or the manta rays will come back to the exact same cleaning station. So if they find a good one, they're very reliable clients. And then these special areas actually support secondary behaviors of social behavior and also mating behavior. So to find a cleaning station like that on Aliwal Shoal was very special, especially given that this species of devil ray, the short fin devil ray, is quite endangered. So it was nice to find another area where they can be monitored and seen.
I really wish I was a cartoon artist, because I've got a complete mental picture of the cleaning and then a couple of them on the side lying on a bed having a massage and feeling really good about life.
Michelle, you mentioned that the manta or the rays are endangered. Tell us about their numbers dwindling. Do we know what's causing it?
Yeah, more or less. So the sharks and ray group, they, you've probably heard before that they're not doing so well. We've lost, I think a recent paper said that we've lost half of our sharks and rays globally, or half of our sharks. So this cartilaginous group of fish, they have very slow reproduction, actually. So when we think of the word fish, we often imagine those bony fish that have they have spawning modes, and they often reproduce a lot more offspring than the sharks and rays. And the sharks and rays are very slow growing, very little offspring. So any kind of exploitation of them, whether it's intentional or not, is actually not sustainable on any of these species. So with the devil ray specifically, there is a targeted fishery for them, but also equally as destructive. They get caught as bycatch in a lot of fishing methods that aren't sustainable. So fishing methods such as gill nets and trawling, long line and seine nets. So these rays are very vulnerable to that bycatch, and that also contributes to their endangered status.
What does one do about this, though, Michelle? How does one change the aspect? Because I always say that you can talk about elephants and you can talk about rhino because they're so easily visible, whereas the ocean, we never see it. And we get that, we are lulled into a wonderful feeling of normality because of the way the tide comes in and goes out. Every day it is as regular as clockwork. Everything looks fine. It's underneath, and we can't see underneath. How do we change that aspect?
Yeah, I agree, Tim. Well, one amazing thing is to spread awareness. So what your amazing podcast is doing, and also just kind of going out and spreading the word with your friends and family. You know, as you say, a lot of landlocked people might not see the ocean. So it's always best to share your stories and your photos and things about these rays. With regards to the fishing, it's actually a wonderful app, South African made with the WWF, called SASSI, S-A-S-S-I. And that's a super useful app that you can actually monitor sustainable fish species that you can eat or not. Because if we eat a certain fish species, we might be contributing to that bycatch if the fishermen use one of those destructive fishing methods. Where we're on the coast, we're very lucky that we can often buy fish from a fisherman who use hook and line. But elsewhere, we're not always so lucky to be able to do that. So always great to be a responsible consumer and just make sure our everyday choices are contributing to the ocean. So everyone can help the ocean no matter where they are in the world. Simple things like reducing plastics or being careful of what you eat all really does have a huge help on the sea.
Now, with your work with this, what turned you to rays? Because I'm always fascinated what turns a scientist into something that, when listening to you as well, this is more than just your research. This is a passion. What turned you to deciding that rays were the thing to go for?
Oh, yeah, that's a good question. Well, so I always wanted to be a marine biologist. I did some work with, you know, coral restoration and coral reef monitoring. And, I mean, there's no shortage of incredible jobs out there. But, yeah, I always had sharks and rays in the back of my mind, I suppose. And I think I was just waiting for the experience or the opportunity to present itself. And I had a couple of very special manta ray encounters. And then when I did the research at home, you know, on the internet, just seeing that there actually wasn't much known about them. And yeah, I applied to a volunteer position over in Inyambon where you dove many years ago, Tim. That's where I kind of started my experience with manta research with the Marine Megafauna Foundation. So basically since then, I haven't stopped. And with this particular group of rays, there's actually very little known about them. And because they're such slow reproducing animals, they really need our help. They're very vulnerable or in some cases endangered. So yeah, that's kind of where the passion comes from as well.
When we, I mean, right at the beginning of the conversation, Tim mentioned that for some of us, when we think of rays, we think of, for instance, what happened to Steve Irwin. Are rays dangerous? Should you be concerned if you encounter one?
That's a great question, Gogo. So part of that passion came from having some really amazing experiences with them. They're not dangerous. So manta rays and delta rays specifically, they don't have stingers, actually. So you'll hear in the media often, they do say that Steve Irwin was injured by or killed by a manta ray. That's not true, actually. And even with the stingrays, they don't want to sting you. It's just as traumatic for them as it is for a human. But as it goes with the ocean and all animals, you don't want to handle them, right? You don't want to go out and touch them, or perhaps you might step on them, which is also an accident. That's when those things occur. But other than that, they're very gentle, very intelligent creatures.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by when one talks about the intelligence of these animals. And it appears from reading what I have or what you've written that the rays are inquisitive, and they also appear to have a really interesting communication system.
Yeah, so the manta rays, actually a study that came out about a decade ago on the brain-to-body size ratio. So that's kind of a physical measurement of intelligence. So, for instance, humans have the largest brain-to-body size ratio of all animals. But of all the fish, so that includes all the bony fish and the sharks and the rays, manta rays have the largest brain-to-body size ratio. And then we kind of encounter these behaviors that are also evidence of their intelligence. So they've got these complex social behaviors. They have behaviors where they feed in a cyclone. You might have seen it on Blue Planet 2, because they're smart enough to know that if they swim together in a vortex, they'll bring all the plankton into the middle and eat. So it's kind of a cooperative feeding. I did some research with a colleague in Indonesia named Rob Perryman, and we looked at their cephalic fins. So those are the fins on their faces. Actually gave them a name so many moons ago, many, many years ago, as devil rays, because they look like horns of the silhouette. But those fins actually help push plankton into their mouth for filter feeding. And we think they also are used as sensory organs and possibly communication as well. Because when you're in the water with these animals, you know, they come up to you, they stare into your eye. They might open one of these cephalic fins as they're passing you. So there's definitely a lot of complex behavior going on. We just still have to do more research to confirm it. In addition to that, lots of amazing behaviors.
Yeah. That's fascinating, Michelle. And it sounds like such an interesting area of research. And I think we could keep talking about the work you're doing. But unfortunately, we are out of time. But Michelle, thank you so much for joining us this morning.